Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. My name is Fred Flights, a senior vice president with the Center for Security Policy, and I'm substituting this week for a vacationing Frank Gaffney, the president of the center, who will be back on Monday. I have three fabulous guests today, but before I turn to them, I want to talk again about the North Korea situation. And I want to start with an extraordinary op-ed that was published in the New York Times yesterday by former National Security Advisor Susan Rice. And in this op-ed, Ms. Rice says that history shows that we can, if we must, tolerate nuclear weapons in North Korea, the same way we tolerated the far greater threat of thousands of Soviet nuclear weapons during the Cold War. Wow. That's what I call an aha moment. It's an aha moment because it confirms what many of us have long believed, that the basic assumption by the Obama administration concerning the Iranian and North Korean nuclear programs is that they do not pose a serious threat to international security, and we can live with them. I believe that this was actually a secret assumption that Obama officials decided was too controversial to reveal, but it was always there. Now, I wrote in my book, Obama Bomb, A Dangerous and Growing National Security Fraud on the Nuclear Agreement with Iran, that this was the ideological basis for the nuclear agreement and with Iran. And I cited several experts who I believe influenced Barack Obama's thinking to decide to strike a nuclear deal with Iran, and he would have struck one with North Korea if they had not been so difficult to work with, that conceded the nuclear bomb to Iran. For example, I cited Paul Pilar, a former CIA officer who now teaches at Georgetown University, very well-respected foreign policy expert on the left. Well, he contended in a March-April Washington Monthly article that we can live with a nuclear Iran. That was actually the title of his piece. The late Joseph Waltz, a well-known professor of international relations at Columbia University, justified an Iranian nuclear bomb in a July-August 2012 Foreign Affairs article entitled, Why Iran Should Get the Bomb. And I've argued for a long time that there actually is this belief on the left that there's no problem with nations like North Korea and Iran getting the bomb. Now, Waltz actually argues that nuclear weapons are stabilizing. And he makes an argument that nuclear weapons being possessed by India and Pakistan has prevented armed conflict from breaking out. So why can't Iran have nuclear weapons? After all, Israel has them. Well, the reason that Iran and North Korea cannot have nuclear weapons is because they are state sponsors of terror who have threatened to use their military forces to destroy neighboring states. India and Pakistan are not making threats like that. Yes, Russia and China have nuclear arsenals. Russia has a large arsenal. But to say that Russian leaders are the same kind of rational actors as the leaders of North Korea and Iran, I simply don't think makes any sense. And when it comes to North Korea, Ms. Rice is justifying letting a state have nuclear weapons, which is testing ICBMs, which is threatening to attack the United States and its neighbors with nuclear weapons, which supposedly has 60 nuclear weapons now. This is according to a revelation from U.S. intelligence agencies by the Washington Post earlier this week. this is not a nuclear force that is a deterrent. This is an offensive nuclear force, an offensive missile force. And I tell you that the backward and naive foreign policy by the last administration that gave the North Koreans 8 years to advance this program, where basically they looked the other way. I like to say that there was leading from behind in the Middle East. In the Asia Pacific, there was no leading at all. There was an absolute and complete vacuum. The idea that this was acceptable to the last administration, and Rice is now claiming that we can just live with a North Korean nuclear arsenal, is really appalling. But it is an aha moment, because it helps explain at the end of the day what was behind this disastrous nuclear agreement with Iran. How could the Obama administration agree to a nuclear deal that allowed Iran to continue to enrich uranium with over 5,000 centrifuges, will give it a plutonium-producing heavy water reactor, has very weak verification provisions, and leaves out ballistic missiles, which are Iran's nuclear weapons delivery system? Well, the reason is that the Obama administration, and Mr. Obama in particular, didn't think Iran having nuclear weapons was a problem, that it wasn't a threat to American or international security. And it could be that Mr. Obama believed that somehow, by making Iran into a regional hegemon, that would somehow benefit regional security, that it would stabilize the region. I really don't understand that line of argument, but I have some colleagues who believe that this actually was also part of the rationale of the Obama administration of going along with this terrible agreement. And to support that agreement, I note that during the nuclear talks, there were a lot of side discussions about Syria and Iraq between U.S. representatives and Iran. And I don't think it's an accident that just after the nuclear agreement with Iran was announced in July 2015, the Iranians sent troops into Syria. I think basically Iran saw a green light to substantially increase its presence in the region. I want to turn back to the North Korea situation, because there were some other recent developments of note. North Korea this week has said that it is prepared to attack the island of Guam. This is an American territory located about 2,000 miles from North Korea. To do this, North Korean missiles would have to overfly Japan. Japan has said that is a red line. It will shoot down any missiles that do that. According to the North Korean press agency, North Korea is planning to fire about 4 missiles in the vicinity of Guam, and that the government is preparing a Guam strike plan. Well, I discuss later in this program with Washington Times columnist Bill Gertz about how North Korea probably does not have missiles accurate enough to go as far as Guam. But frankly, I think we have to consider the worst case scenario, because North Korea's nuclear missile programs have advanced far faster than anyone had imagined. I don't think they could get that far, but we shouldn't be taking any chances. Now, President Trump responded to this statement about North Korea's threat to fire missiles near Guam, and criticism of a statement he made earlier in the week that he will respond aggressively, that North Korea will face fire and fury like the world has never seen, by saying on Thursday that maybe his response was not tough enough, that the American people are tired of these threats by North Korea, and that he's prepared to stand up to them. In my view, the words of President Trump and the information released this week on North Korea's nuclear capabilities are part of a strategy to increase the pressure on North Korea, to increase the pressure on China, and to get China to abide by UN Security Council sanctions to address this growing threat with North Korea. I'm optimistic we're going to see some progress over the next couple months, but I got to tell you, I am cautiously optimistic. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio. I'm Fred Flight, substituting for Frank Gaffney. My first guest today will be Center for Security Policy expert Alex Van Ness. Please stay tuned.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.